Jokic hands off to Murray, right back to him. That is smooth. Gordon, oh, Jokic, able to grab. Jackson fires away and knocks it down. Shot clock down to six. Murray, step back three, is good. Jokic, offensive rebound, finds Gordon, cutting and slamming. As Jokic banks it in off the window. What an effort by Jokic to bat that alive over three and then cash in. Here's Murray, five to shoot. We'll put it up and hit it. Jokic kicks it out. Porter Jr. able to bank it in. A 10-0 Denver run. Murray flies in and finishes over Plumlee. Jokic lobbing it up, and Gordon hoops the alley. Jokic, patient, draws three, still takes, and floats it in. Shot clock all the way down to two. Murray has to hoist. Got it on the rim. Loose ball. Caldwell Pope has it. Another chance for Denver. Porter Jr., you bet. George unable to hit the three. Murray steps into one and knocks it down. Murray to Porter Jr. He got it. Bounces. Jokic spins, flips, and hits. And they're not going to get it. Jokic on the steal, lopping it up. There's the triple-double. There's the exclamation point.
Another triple-double. A Nuggets win in OT over the Clippers last night. Denver jumps up to 43-19 on the season. Woo! I'm telling you, man. That's the kind of game. That's the kind of game you look at a game like that. Nice bounce back win after pretty much getting stomped by Memphis on Saturday. That was a rough game. But Denver bounces back. Win, big win over the Los Angeles Clippers. Nikola Jokic, 40, 10, and 17. 17 boards for the Joker. Three steals. That's. I mean, I'm telling you, Angel. Michael Porter Jr. plays like that. You're going to win this thing. You are going to win this thing. Jamal Murray looked good, getting back in action. He had 21 points, 12 assists for him. Bruce Brown off the bench with 13 points. Yeah, Reggie Jackson doing, he's doing all right so far. Working himself into this mix. 7 points for him. Got to see Bones Highland. How you feeling about that? He played 15 minutes against Denver. 10 points for him. Not a bad game by him off the bench, but I think the Nuggets are happy with where they are in this setup. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. We're live today from the Aloe Fiber Studios, and we're getting down to the stretch, man. We are busting through the stretch of the season, for the final stretch of the season, and the Nuggets look like the front runner here. Second best record in the NBA, or I should say, tied for the best record. Milwaukee hasn't played as many games yet, so they're 43-17. Boston's 44-17, but the Nuggets are running away with this thing. Even with the loss to Memphis on Saturday, Denver is still 5.5 games up over the Memphis Grizzlies. Feeling better about this team's chances to win a title? I mean, you're going to see stuff. There's going to be bad games. The best teams in the NBA are going to have about 10 games where you go, whoa, they just didn't have it. Typically, you see that in the regular season. You see it in the playoffs, too. And they didn't have it against Memphis. Joker didn't even play. He played like half of the third. Don't give me this crap about the Nuggets trying to pad stats, that they're trying to pad stats for Joker. When they blow teams out, he doesn't play in the fourth. When they're getting blown out, he doesn't play in the fourth. If they were trying to pad stats and keep that triple-double average going, he would have played in the fourth regardless of the amount they were losing by.
I don't understand that narrative of stat padding, because aren't you supposed to rebound the ball and pass it to your teammates? If your teammates don't make shots, you're not getting the assist. So you're like, I don't understand that you're playing basketball the way it's meant to be played. pass it, rebound it, shoot it.
Now, Russell Westbrook, years ago, when he was chasing the triple-double average and all that, there was some kind of unwritten rule between he and his teammates. All the easy boards go to Russ. There was that. That was happening. You know, and he was playing the full length of the game, whether they were blowing teams out or whether they were getting smoked, Russ was still playing. Joker is like the one guy you never see that happen with.
He's just playing.
Well, you never see him playing when it's not necessary to play, when it's unnecessary to play. He's not in a game when they're smoking teams. Malone pulls him. I think maybe once a couple weeks ago or a couple games ago, they were trying to get that final assist for the triple-double. Maybe that was against Dallas. But that's not stat padding. Stat padding is what Russell Westbrook did a few years back, where it was like free throw goes up, ball's up in the air, there's a guy clearly going to get the board. He just kind of walks away from it so Russ can grab that. That's what that is. Staying in a game when you're up 20 with 5 minutes left in the game, that's stat padding. You're not seeing that with the Joker.
No, because Jokic's stats are actual stats.
Yeah.
He's actually getting all of those rebounds and actually passing the ball, and his teammates are making that many shots.
And they're all in meaningful moments of the game. I mean,
he didn't get the last
game,
assist until like the last 30 seconds.
In an NBA game, 20-point lead is not safe until you're like 6 minutes left, and even then it can be interesting, but that's how it goes. So when Joker's playing, he's in those meaningful minutes most of the time. Early in the game, he's getting a lot of his work done. A monster game by him, though. Just absolutely monster.
4-0 against the Clippers this season.
Whew.
That is big.
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And this was, again, you want to see a bounce back win after you get smoked by the Grizzlies. Those games happen. I didn't freak out after it. It just happens. You don't want to see a stretch of that. But bouncing back the way you did on a back-to-back, going to overtime, smoke them in overtime. And Porter and Jamal Murray hit those key threes late. They're up by one with like 4 minutes left, 3 minutes left. And Jamal hits a big three. Porter comes right back down, hits another big three. Puts that game out. They outscored L.A. 14-4 in overtime. That's playoff stuff right there.
Yeah, I think a game like last night shows you what a playoff atmosphere is going to look like for this Nuggets team. Especially at home, where they are, five losses at home this season? So
four losses at home.
Home court advantage matters, especially when you're in the Mile High City, because when teams look down and see 52-80, and there's thousands of people chanting after Jamal Murray or an MPJ 3, that's the type of environment you get, and they thrive in it.
Yeah, they really do. So now they're at Houston tomorrow. Home again against Memphis on Friday. That's going to be on ESPN. That'll be a big game. That'll be a big game. You know, we're down to what, 20 games left? So
it's crazy. They already played three games since the break.
Yeah, it's nuts.
It's going to go by quick.
Yeah, it really is. Then you spread them out a little bit over the next week or two. But yeah, the season ends April 9th. You got to squeeze in the rest of these games by April 9th. What's the win, you know?
Only one back-to-back in this last stretch.
20 games left. How many wins do you think it's going to take to just lock this thing up? We talking 10 more wins to lock this thing up? That puts you at 53? Memphis is 5 games back. So, you know, it's not like Memphis is going to win every game from here on out. You're very close to locking. You got 20 games left, and you got a 5.5 game lead on Memphis. So if you got Houston, you got to take care of those teams. You got to take care of the rough opponents. Set those big matchups up against like Memphis and such. But got an interesting road trip in mid March that you got to be careful with. It's at Toronto, at Detroit, at New York, at Brooklyn, at Washington. All games you should win. I mean, at this point, man, you're seeing it where it feels like you could look at every matchup here from here on out and say, yeah, Nuggets have a shot to win that. You're close,
see, at the end of March, Phoenix, at Phoenix, home against Golden State, at Houston, at Phoenix, at Utah, home against Sacramento.
You kind of want to have everything locked up before you get into that stretch, don't you? Because that's a tough stretch.
Definitely before you play Phoenix, because that's going to be the measuring stick.
KD's going to be back by that time. I think he's playing
Wednesday,
isn't he? Yeah. So he'll be back, and he'll be fully emerged into the Phoenix lineup and get their scheme and all that stuff. So you want to have this thing locked up, Angel, by the time you're into mid-March, I think. Because you're right. Home court advantage, it's going to be crucial for Denver.
Just win.
Just go out and win, man. That was a big win last night. You got the Nuggets rolling. You got the Avs have won like five in a row. They're finding ways to get things done. They made an interesting trade. They got Jack Johnson, not the singer, but he was with this team, and getting him back in the fold here, that's going to be a good one for the Avs. Dude, we might be doing something special here. How many times has it happened where the hockey team and the basketball team have won a title in the same year? That's an interesting one. Let's look it up. 17 minutes after the hour. Let's take a quick break. We're going to have Jerry Schimmel on the show today. Jerry's got the final regular season game tonight for the UNC Bears, and then they go into the Big Sky Conference Tournament. Let's look at the standings there. We'll have Chris Dempsey on in the 1 o'clock hour, so we're looking forward to talking some Nuggets with him. Calvin Booth speaks about the Bones Highland trade, so we'll talk about that. A lot to get to. Short time to do it, but let's find that stat on, Joe. That'll be a good one coming back. It's never happened. It's never happened.
Eight times the NHL and NBA teams have hosted or been in the final game, but it's never happened where the same city has won both.
Wow. Wow.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. It feels like it could. The Avs, they're unbelievable right now. And they've been able to do this with so many injuries. And maybe they get Landeskog back, too. So 18 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, it's the whole show powered by PDC Energy. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Want to hear from the coach? Listen to Coach Speak, weekdays 10 to 11 on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, current NFL wide receiver for the Los Angeles Rams, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like we were in a place where I think it was just time for a transition. We got big goals we're trying to accomplish. Bones has expressed his desire to like play and you know be able to show what he can do. And you know, if you're in his shoes, you can completely come understand where he's coming from. He got a great opportunity last year because Jamal's injury. He showed he can play in the NBA. He showed he could have big nights. But like where we're at now, we're healthier and we're trying to win a championship. And like, you know, just because you got to play a lot last year because guys were injured doesn't necessarily mean that there's going to be a role for you to play a lot this year. So I think that was always going to be like a point of friction for him and for the club.
There's Nuggets general manager Calvin Booth talking about the Bones Highland trade. This is the first real media availability he's had to address this, and he spoke about that right before the Nuggets Clippers game. I just like there's a couple things that I really like about what he said. There's really no sugarcoating it. He's like, Bones wanted to like play and we weren't having it. So sorry. He is being so truthful in that assessment. You know, he said, hey, Bones, just because you got to play a lot last year because guys were hurt doesn't mean your role is going to be the same this year. That's just how it is, man. And Bones was expecting that kind of treatment this season, and it didn't happen. Michael Malone doesn't want to talk about Bones, but Calvin Booth was talking about him. And he said, hey, listen, the guy wants to play. He was sensing it. Booth was sensing it. Malone was sensing it, that Bones was getting more and more frustrated with his inconsistent minutes. So rather than let this thing simmer, rather than let this, or hope that it simmers, rather than let this thing go on, Calvin Booth and Malone, I think Malone obviously was a big part of this, they made a big decision to avoid any kind of drama before you get into the playoffs.
I think he should be more frustrated with the inconsistent playing because I've said it multiple times, Bones had every opportunity to be the sixth man for this team. Is that what he wanted? Probably not, but these are the circumstances with Jamal Murray coming back. You know, with the we don't really know what we're going to have with Bruce Brown just yet. So, Bones, you're going to be our sixth guy coming off the bench. Give us that energy. Give us that scoring threat. And it wasn't there enough. It wasn't there consistently. So you have to move on.
Yeah. And Bones didn't get that. You know, that's the thing you got to do as a rookie sometimes.
Is that what Malone was talking to him about?
Yeah, probably.
Like, hey, this is your role this year on this team. This is the role.
Your role changed. And we got another young guy, a rookie in Christian Brown, that gets his role. He might go games where he doesn't play at all or very few minutes. But then he's going to go games where he's very important. You have to understand that as a young player. If you don't get that, then you're not going to survive very long. Now, if you're so good that they work through the growing pains with you, you're just that good of a player, great. But he wasn't. He was an all right player who had moments of greatness, had a lot of moments of below average. So I just think that this was such a big... Calvin Booth, dude, since he took over, he has made some big, gutsy moves. Now, I know the fan base doesn't like Will Barton, but still, that was a hard Band-Aid to pull off. And moving on from Monte Morris, who was a fixture for the Nuggets, a very good player for Denver. But in order to get what you wanted in return for Will Barton, you had to add Monte Morris. That was a tough move. Bringing in Bruce Brown, banking on this guy being more than just a defensive player, but actually a big piece to what you're trying to do. I mean, KCP continues, you know, only 8 points for him, but just an efficient game. So, Calvin Booth, man, if it wasn't for how great Joe Sakic is doing with the Avs, I'd sit here right now and say, dude, Calvin Booth's the man. He's the best GM in the state. But that's got to go to Joe Sakic right now. But I'll tell you what.
Is that a problem?
No. That's a good problem to have.
Something the Broncos could maybe learn from.
Yeah. And the Rockies, too.
Hey, they're 2-0 in spring training.
Dude. Get your World Series tickets.
Double digit in both games.
Wow. Did you watch any of this?
No.
What? Okay. What is going on with AT&T Sportsnet? What? Are we not going to be able to watch Rockies games?
It's because
there's
sketchy.
Five or six times a year, I got to have my Rockies. So there's five or six times. No, trust me. I really love watching the Rockies. It's usually around July if they're irrelevant. I start to fade because we're getting into training camp. We're getting into NFL training camp. But are we going to have another situation where, like, AT&T Sportsnet is the same situation as what we're seeing with Altitude? Watch. This will probably be the freaking year the Rockies get it together. So can I not watch Rockies game as of right now on DirecTV?
So Warner Brothers Discovery is telling teams it is leaving Sportsnet. So their parent company is kind of just cutting them off.
So the Rockies will be what are the options?
Jerry Schimmel.
Listen to Jerry Schimmel.
All you need.
I mean, that's the thing, kids. Radio will never let you down.
This is a ploy by Monfort and friends to get people to actually go to the games.
Oh, it's deep.
Can't watch it on TV, but you can sure as... heck, buy a ticket.
Let's go fill that stadium up even more. Maybe Jerry knows a little bit about that. Do you think, now again, I didn't hear any of the calls for the Rockies over the weekend, but how confused are these broadcasters with all the new stuff going on, too, with the pitch timer?
Strange.
Just reading it again, because I have to have it up. I have it pulled up all the time because I forget. The pitch timer, in theory, sounds great, but it's so complicated. 15 seconds with bases empty, 20 seconds with runners on. Hitter gets one timeout per plate appearance, must be in batter's box with 8 seconds left. Pitchers get two disengagements, pickoff attempts or step-offs, per batter. Violations are a balk. Limits on pickoff attempts led to 26% increase in stolen base attempts in the minors. So pitch timer also helped reduce game length by 25 minutes in the minors. Isn't that kind of confusing? How do these guys know? I guess they got the big clock up there, but
yeah, but the hitter gets one timeout. They have their little routine that they'll do. You know, spin the ball around, do whatever, and that that routine could change if there's a runner on, if there's not a runner on. You know, oh, I already used my two, you know, throw-off pitches. Now I'm, like really on the clock. Oh, wait, the hitter just called a timeout. What if it all happens, like, one after the other?
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
I don't know. And what if the batter's not there? Like, he gets in at 9 seconds or 8.5 seconds. And is it going to be like the delay of game? Because they never get that right. The delay of game in the NFL, it always feels like it's about a second off. Because you'll see it run down to zero. That should be a penalty. Then they snap it.
Well, I mean, you know, ref, look at the clock, look at the ball. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's about the time. Yeah. Oh,
with,
there
with
it
baseball,
is.
Baseball, more game stoppages for a game we're trying to speed up.
Yeah, no question about it. 30 minutes after the hour, Jerry Schimmel, he's the voice of the UNC Bears. One final regular season game for UNC tonight before they get into the Big Sky Conference tournament. We'll talk to Jerry about that. We'll talk about baseball with him as Jerry is in Arizona doing spring training for the Rockies. So we'll talk to Jerry coming up next. First, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
This is your UNC Bears head men's basketball coach, Steve Smiley. And you're listening to the whole show on 1310 KFKA. Go Bears. I just want to use your love tonight. I don't want to lose your love tonight.
And I believe Jerry when he says he never gets sick of this song. He hears it every single day during the season. Jerry Schimmel, the voice of the Rockies, voice of the Bears. Jerry, you love that song. I know you do, man. You probably just bump that song on your way to games and everything just to prepare.
Well, I don't quite do that, Brady, but I don't mind the song at all. In fact, it's kind of background noise for us. We're like not even paying attention to it much anymore after so many times that we've heard it.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm telling you what, Jerry, something's working for this Rockies team, man. Spring training, I get, but you got to play the games that are in front of you, and the Rockies might have the best offense in the league. It's just, there's no bones about it. That's how it is right now.
Yeah, exactly right. 24 runs in their first two games. So the games are sort of like college scores so far in the first two games. And you'll see that in spring training. Both, one team might get beat that way. The next day they win that way. And that's just the way the spring training works. But I think the impressive part about it is it's the young guys, the guys that are not really on the radar or the guys that probably are not projected to make the team, that are hitting the ball early on. And there are some veterans, too. Ryan McMahon's had some good swings and Chris Bryant. But the young guys that we were looking forward to seeing, we have seen the first two games, and they've come through, especially offensively.
Well, that's what you said last week. That's what you're kind of looking for when you get into spring game, is who's going to stand out, who's going to be a young guy maybe we're not talking about as much that might get his name going. And so far it seems like that's happening.
Yep, no question about it. And really the guys that had been talked about, you know, Zach Veen and Tovar and Doyle and some others have been the guys that have shown flashes already in the first two games. So that's the exciting part. You know, you get your eyes, get a set of eyes on these young players for the first time. Tovar, of course, we saw last year a little bit, but I've never seen Zach Veen hit. And he's got this incredibly beautiful swing, and the approach to the game is really fun. I think Doyle's the same way and a really good center fielder. So, you know, there's guys that you hear about and you read about, maybe you see on video that you've seen for the first time in spring training, which is a lot what spring training is about for every team. But it's really exciting for the Rockies because, like you and I talked about, Brady, I think it's the development of young guys that's going to be the key to success or failure for this team this season.
Jerry Schimmel joining us, talking a little Rockies here. Is there two games in for spring training so far? All right, so how are the rule changes going so far, Jerry? I don't know how. Like, I have to refresh it every day because I forget exactly. So how many seconds do they have when the bases are empty? How many seconds with runners on? Have you got it down, Pat, yet? Or do you still have to have a little cheat sheet there for you?
You know, I think I got the rules down. Just dealing with them is going to be a tough part for us. And so far we haven't had any issues at all. It was one violation yesterday, and that was late in the ball game, and you know, Daniel Bard got assessed a ball for throwing an extra warm up pitch, which I didn't even know that was a rule. So no, but so far the players have liked it, the pitchers, the hitters have appreciated it. Umpires doing a great job. I didn't even hardly think about it on Saturday in that first game, Brady, to be honest with you. every once in a while I looked up and I saw, you know, four or five on that pitch clock and thought, all right, he better hurry up and throw a pitch, and he did. But you get 20 seconds to throw a pitch when that clock starts, when there's a runner on or runners on, and if there's nobody on, you get 15 seconds. And a hitter has to be ready in the box with 8 seconds on that clock as it's winding down. So, like I said, everybody seems excited about it. You know, we played a game that was 18 runs and 27 hits. We played it in 3 hours,
wow,
which normally would be a 3:45, 4-hour game. So I think it's serving its purpose, and I think it's continued to do that as we head to the regular season.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, Jerry. You know, how do you think it's being received? And you said, hey, it sounds like everybody's pretty excited about it. Does that go for the majority of the players? The players seem to really be in on this?
Yep, absolutely. I think especially hitters. I think hitters right now feel like maybe have advantage because, you know, the pitcher can't step off the mound and touch his, you know, lick his fingers. He can't, you know, sit back and take that deep breath. And so I think hitters feel like they have an advantage right now. The only player that I have heard so far from any team has been Kyle Freeland. And Kyle started that game yesterday, and he said, there were times I really had to speed up when I knew I couldn't step off the mound. I couldn't regroup mentally. I couldn't take a couple of deep breaths like I like to do. So he said, I got to get used to that. I said, it's not a bad thing, but I got to get used to it. So everybody else is excited about it, Brady. They really are. And I think this is a game that the fans want. I think especially younger fans. Let's speed this thing up. Let's just get down to business. Let's get the ball, and let's pitch it, and let's be ready to hit. And we aren't going to miss any action, but we're going to speed this game up a little bit.
I mean, Jerry, my favorite pitchers are the guys that just get it and go. I mean, I like the theatrics sometimes. You know, guys have their interesting motions and stuff. But for the most part, I mean, I just love it when a guy gets that ball quickly and he's throwing it down, pitching it. And then that's my favorite part about this. So I was just – I like the idea in theory. I was just wondering how they were going to implement this, but so far so good at least.
Yeah, I think what's happened to Brady is way before everybody got to spring training, they were working on it. I know Daniel Bard talked about that yesterday. He said, you know, as soon as I saw the rules going to be implemented, we saw that pitch clock, I started practicing. I started doing it in my backyard a little bit, just having a clock on my phone and have my wife time it. So guys are ready, and I think hitters the same way. You know, live batting practice, they practiced that. So they had an opportunity for a week or so before these games started to get ready for it. And I think you got to credit some players. They've done a nice job of adjusting.
Now you got the shift restrictions, the bigger bases. How about that? How are the rest of these being received, the other rule changes?
I think really well. I think infielders are excited about not having to shift again. Certainly hitters are that way. So it takes a little bit of the guessing out of the game. So if you got a guy that's a dead pole hitter, you play the shift as far as you can. You don't go on the other side, but you're on the edge. And I think it makes for a better game that way. Even on Saturday, we saw some base hits to right field with left-handed hitters that normally would be outs because of the shift. So I think both hitters, certainly hitters, are excited about the shift rules. And I think infielders are the same way. It's more traditional. It's what the fans want. It looks better to me at for a baseball game. So I think the shift rule is a good one as well.
Jerry Schimmel joining us. A busy day for you, man. I mean, a couple of broadcasts, big one tonight for the UNC Bears. How are you going to balance it all?
Life is good when you can do a baseball game and a basketball game, Brady, in the same day. You know what? I was thinking about that this morning. It's going to be a long day, but it's going to be a fun day. I mean, I get to do a Major League Baseball game and a Division I basketball game in one day. To me, that's just fun, you know. And with the new rules and spring training, I won't be rushed trying to get home to do this game remotely. So it'll be great. And you're right, the Bears have a big game tonight. They could really use a win going to the tournament. So baseball and basketball on the same day. A broadcaster like me is loving life.
Well, 2 weeks ago, we were feeling really good about the Bears. They had just won 3 in a row. They beat Weber State. They beat Portland State. Beat Sacramento State. But since have dropped their last 3 games, pretty close games too, Jerry. Yeah. But how are we feeling about this team right now? I mean, 2 weeks ago, we're thinking, man, that's a really dangerous team. You still feel that way about this team?
Yeah, I do. I do, only because they're not getting blown out. You know, they win 3 in a row, and they play really well. And they did not play bad basketball the last 3 games. And I talked to Steve Smiley this morning for the coaches show, the pregame show, and he said, you know, we didn't play bad basketball on Saturday. You know, the talent level on the Big Sky is so even right now. I mean, he's never seen it like this before. And you see it. You know, you got bottom teams beating Eastern Washington and middle teams knocking off top teams. And so that's the talent level in the Big Sky this year. So for the Bears to win three games, then lose three games in a row, I don't think should be surprising anybody, because almost everybody except Montana State and Eastern Washington has done the same thing this year.
Well, I'm looking at the standings here, Jerry, and without having everybody's schedule pulled up, is it still possible for the Bears to move up into that sixth spot?
No, they can't do that now because of some tiebreakers. And I was talking to Steve about that this morning. But they could go anywhere from 7 to 10.
Yeah.
I mean, they could be the 7th seed or they could be the 10th seed. Now, they got to play that first day because they don't have that 6th seed now. But at the same time, like you and I have talked about, Brady, I think it's a dangerous team. I really do. And I think senior-led like they are, these guys will be ready, knowing it's they're going to play their last collegiate game or games. I think they'll be up for that. So I still think this team is a dangerous Big Sky tournament team.
Yeah, I do too. They, you know, when it all clicks for them, it's hard to believe when you just look at their record that they've only won 10 games, Jerry, because in the games that they win, you know, you see how good they can be. When they beat CSU, when they beat Weber State at home, that's the team you know can get there, but it's a surprise to me still. It's hard to believe they've only won 10.
Yep, I'm the same way. With that talent level, you would think they'd have won many more than that. I know that the pre-conference schedule did help when you're playing Baylor and Houston and some other teams on the road like that. You're gonna lose games early on, but in the Big Sky, that record to me is really surprising, and it's probably deceiving a little bit too. And I'm not making excuses for this team at all, but there's been some bad luck. There really has been. I mean, teams are, you know, hitting 19 free throws in a row against you, two different games, and you know, guys that normally don't hit threes on Saturday. Their center steps out, hits four of his first five three-pointers. Like, well, what?
Yeah.
What's going on there? And then Jalen Cohn couldn't miss a shot in the last 5 minutes of that game. And they're good. They're both very good players, but they're not that good. And the Bears just have had some bad luck this year. And Dalton Connect missed five free throws on Saturday. He makes, you know, three or four of those, you got to win. So, and the same way in three or four other games this year, Matt Johnson makes, I think, 37 out of 39 free throws, then misses three in a row in a loss. I mean, just fluky stuff that's happened to this team all year long. It's just one of those seasons for the Bears. So hopefully that's behind them after tonight, and maybe they get some of this good luck in the tournament in Boise.
Jerry, who do you think's going to be the star for this team? Who's, if they are to make a historic run here, find a way to get into the conference championship, who do you think it's going to be when you look at it? Do you look at it and say it's going to be Dalen or surprise guy or one of the big three?
I think Matt Johnson is the key. And I said this, I think, to Tanner on Friday, last Friday as well. You know, your point guard normally is the guy that makes you go. He's not quite the quarterback equivalent to football, but he's the guy that makes you go. And Matt's that type of guy that in a big game, he seems to come through. You want him taking that last shot. You want him at the free throw line late in the ball game. You want him directing traffic with the ball in his hand. And he's a good defender as well. So I think Matt, maybe not necessarily scoring, but distributing and playing a little defense and racking up some assists, I think is going to be the key in the tournament.
Well, we got one more regular season game. See if they can get some momentum. Beat Idaho State tonight. Of course, you'll be on that call. Probably, you know, fresh off of your baseball game today, Jerry. Don't mention any of the wrong names. Don't cross, you know, don't say Dalen Kuntz is on first base or Charlie Blackman gets an and one. Don't mix anything, man. This is crazy. I don't know how many broadcasters do this where they're going to be doing a Major League Baseball game. And then an hour or so later, they're going to be doing a big Division I basketball game.
Yeah, not too many people as fortunate as me, I guess, to do that. But I didn't think about that. There's probably not too many. I'm sure there's a few out there, but not a whole lot. You know what I'm worried about, Brady? I'm worried about calling the shot clock the pitch clock tonight.
Hey, I you know what? I kind of hope you do now, because that would be kind of interesting. That would be fun.
I hope I don't call the pitch clock the shot clock afternoon. I've got to guard against both of those.
Well, you've already got so many things to track with all these rule changes and stuff. Why not add a few more bits of confusion to tonight?
Yeah, exactly.
Jerry, my friend, always appreciate you. We'll be looking forward to both calls coming up later today.
All right, B. Appreciate you having me on, my friend.
All right, man. Jerry Schimmel, the voice of the Rockies by day, the voice of the Bears by night. That's got to be a little history. I mean, there's probably not that many broadcasters that go from a Major League Baseball game. This is what I'm saying to you UNC Bears folks over there. You got Jerry freaking Schimmel broadcasting your games. Show out tonight, Bears, you know, the players. He's broadcasting Major League Baseball, and then as soon as he's done with that, he's broadcasting your game. It's a pretty special deal.
Yeah, especially on senior night, honoring a couple of the veterans of this team, one last game at the bank. It's going to be a little bittersweet.
Yeah, senior night. And again, we don't have to go knee-deep into these conversations yet, but I'm already starting to think, you know, what's this team going to look like next season, Angel? I mean, Dalton Kincaid, of their big three, is the only one that can come back. Will he come back? I think Jerry told us a few weeks ago he felt 50-50 on that. But then the rest, I mean, a lot of young guys, hopefully they can grow up pretty quickly over the offseason. And I know they still got the tournament left, but it's going to take something pretty historic to get through and win this tournament. There's no question about it. 48 minutes after the hour. Quick break coming up. We'll wrap up hour number one. More on Russell Wilson. In fact, our poll question of the day, with everything going on with Russ, as it seems to be, will he have a bounce back season next year? Go vote at theholeshow.com. We're on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
There's a new Ed in town. Hear the blue and gold spring football game on Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Hi, I'm Darren Dunn, Director of Athletics at the University of Northern Colorado, and you're listening to The Whole Show, 1310 KFKA.
Mondays at Cables Pub and Grill make Mondays not so bad. With all-you-can-eat spaghetti for just $5.95. Legendary spaghetti at Cable's Pub and Grill. They have specials and unique days each and every day of the week. So be sure you check them out online, or better yet, just stop by Cable's Pub and Grill, where my friends meet. First Advantage text line 888-530-0043. Poll question of the day. Will Russell Wilson have a bounce-back season next year? Is he going to get this right after even more controversial reports came out over the weekend?
His name's Mr. Unlimited.
It seems like everything we were talking about last year, just amongst us with no real insight to what's going on in the locker room and how he's really perceived. It sounds like all that stuff pretty much true. You know, now you're getting the reports of some Broncos coaches had issue with Russell Wilson's office and the team facility. You think? Like, it's as bad as it sounds, Angel. We talked about it all year, but there was a part of me in the back of my head that was like, well, surely they've got to be okay with it because they're letting it happen. The Athletic has put out another story about members of the coaching staff believed that Wilson separating himself from teammates in his office like that was bad for the coaching staff, too. It was bad for locker room camaraderie. Well, yeah, obviously that looks bad. We all said it. Turns out it was true.
Yeah, I think it was new because it was a new quarterback. And it's, oh, Russell Wilson's really, really good. He must have a process or a reasoning for why he does all of this. And we could push it to the side because, oh, he's Russell Wilson. He's almost Hall of Famer, stuff like that.
Close to it, yeah.
He has a bad year. Now everything comes to light, and we start pointing at things. Oh, that's the reason he was bad, or that's the reason this coach wasn't working with him well. And it's probably somewhere in the middle where he took a step back as a player, and this extra stuff isn't helping him the way it used to.
Well, and
he hasn't earned it.
And players anonymously have come out and said that they had a problem with it, too. To some players on the record, like Kendall Hinton, Melvin Gordon, said they had no issues with Wilson having his own office, but the coaching staff did. One of the coaches told The Athletic, quote, "So are you a coach or are you a player? Your open door should be you sitting at your locker." I mean, it all looked bad. It was awkward to us even when things were positive before the season began. It's like he's getting his own office. He's got a house with all these bathrooms. I mean, all that stuff we joked about turned out to kind of be an issue. The office especially. I have my own coach there. My wife is here all the time hanging out. She was at the facility all the time. Those things just, they seemed strange to us. Now they seem, they're harmful. They're proving harmful. The Athletic said it's worth noting that both coaches who complained about Wilson's office did so anonymously. Do you think it was Hackett? This
no,
is why I got
nice.
Fired. Yeah, probably. Probably too nice.
It's probably the OC.
Yeah.
Out in.
Who was the offensive line coach? That Butch Berry? He was the guy that reportedly, when he was removed, all the players were extremely happy about it. Because he was. I wonder if he's the one. But there were some players that complained about this, too. They've complained about Russell Wilson. Talking, you hear it all the time with Seattle. Now we're starting to hear it with the Broncos, and it's only been a year. So when I ask the question, will Russ have a bounce-back year? It's not just about the play on the field. It's about everything else. Will he put some of the Twitter stuff away? Will that kind of thing calm down for him? My wife and I were talking about this over the weekend, and she's like, well, what would you do if you were Russ today? I said, I'd get off Twitter. That's the number one thing I could do for myself. I'd stop. Or if I'm staying on Twitter, it's literally just going to be posts about the team. Not threes, not Subway sandwiches, none of that stuff. I mean, I would remove it. Remove all those distractions. Then I would go to a dark house like Aaron Rodgers did for 4 days and just reflect. If anybody needs it, maybe it's Russ. Needs to just get away from it all. All right, second hour coming up. We got the Lunch Rush. It's the whole show powered by PDC Energy.